I ended up getting lost at that one, right? So that turned into a whole different type of challenge, and adding another 8 or 9 miles onto a already long 100-mile distance race would presented its own challenges.
Distance Radio, episode 618, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, want to continue to thank DKMS for their continued support of Diz Runs Radio. DKMS, what more can I say about that organization? What a great organization, doing everything they can to help rid the world of blood cancer and other blood-related diseases. And the way that they do that is they help to set up this gigantic pool of potential bone marrow donors. And if you are willing to join the pool, join me in the pool as someone who could potentially donate bone marrow to someone who is battling a form of blood disease or blood cancer, potentially save their life, all you need to do is head over to DKMS.org. And right there on the page, you can request your free sample kit. They'll send you the swab kit in the mail. You swab the Q-tips on the inside of your cheeks, put it in the postage paid envelope, send it on back, and they'll analyze your biomarkers and your DNA and all that good stuff from your saliva, put it into the registry, and if you prove to be a genetic match for someone who is in need of a transplant, in need of some clean, fresh, cancer-free bone marrow to help, fight the cancer, fight the blood disease, and hopefully go on to live a healthy and productive life for many more years to come, they'll set it all up. They'll take care of everything, cost you nothing, and you have a chance, once again, to potentially save a life. So once again, head over to DKMS.org to get that free kit, get swabbed, get in the pool with me. And if you want some more information, or you can request it even on the go, on your phone, just text the word AMAZING, that's AMAZING, to the number 50555 right now to get you connected with DKMS and get you on the path to potentially saving a life. Thank you to DKMS for their continued support of the show. And once again, thank you for continuing to support all of the sponsors, but definitely DKMS. What a great job that they're doing. Thank you for supporting them. And now let's go ahead and dive into today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today I'm joining another one of my fellow Ultra Red Teamers for what promises to be a pretty interesting chat. On the running front, today's guest is quite an accomplished ultra runner, having finished several 100-mile races and a whole mess of those quote-unquote shorter ultra-distance events from 50K, 50-mile, 100K, just basically all the ultra-distance events is one of his specialties for sure on the running front. He's also a plant-based athlete, and he specializes his coaching, his side little coaching business that he has with working with fellow plant-based athletes as well. On the non-running front, today's guest is a scientist who works with a nonprofit that is focused on advancing plant-based meat and clean meat alternatives in an attempt to improve human health, animal health, and environmental health all at the same time. So I'm certainly looking forward to learning a few things and having a great chat today with my friend, Mr. David Welch. So thanks for joining us today, David. Really appreciate it, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And guys, if you want to find out more about what David's got going on and all things in his running life and maybe some into his professional life as well, plantpoweredrunning.com is the website. On Instagram, you can find him with the same handle, at plantpoweredrunning. Easy for me to say, but all one word right there. And on the Twitter, and there's also a Instagram handle the same. All right, so I screwed all that up, but plantpoweredrunning.com is the website. Instagram, at plantpoweredrunning, is one of his handles. Another one, and this second one also shares a Twitter handle. It's at ortho, I don't know, how do I say that, David? Ortho sticky? Ortho?
That sounds good to me. Ortho sticky. Some people say ortho stitchy, but either one is fine.
Okay, so on Twitter and Instagram, both, you can also find him at ortho sticky. And as per usual, if you didn't follow me through all that, because I'm not sure I followed me through all that, but if you want to connect with David, we'll have everything linked up in the show notes as we always do. Dizruns.com/618 is the link that'll take you right there. And obviously we'll have everything linked up, both Instagram accounts, the Twitter account, and the website as well. And anything else we talk about today that deserves to be linked and mentioned, we will make sure to do that as well. So, David, now that I bumbled through the contact information for you, we can get into the good stuff. And the way we start off each episode is with the same question. Every episode is a simple question. For some folks, it's a pretty simple question to answer. For others, it tends to be a little bit more difficult. And if I paint with a broad enough brush, I would have to say that the ultra runners tend to be the ones that have a bit more difficulty answering this question. But it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, that is a difficult question to answer. I think, you know, when I started ultras 4 or 5 years back, I never would have guessed that my answer would be the one I'm about to give you, but I think it really is the 100-mile distance. There's really something magical and transformational for me about covering that distance by foot. And, you know, I've done five so far, and each one of them has been really special in different ways. And I think just because of that, even though I enjoy the other ultra distance events, I think really that 100-mile distance is just so special.
What about the 100-mile distance makes it special? Because for me, for a guy who has run 150K, is signed up to run another one. So I'm you know, I guess I'm officially an ultra runner now. If I've done one, I'm about to do another. Well, not about, but in January of 2019, I'll be doing my second one. But for the most part, you know, 26.2 tends to be good enough for me. Like, you know, get to marathon distance, and that's far enough. I guess what I'm trying to say is I can't wrap my head around even thinking about doing a 100-miler at this point. And you're saying that they're special. What makes that distance so special for you?
Yeah, I think it's just, one is the distance, just that it's like mentally, it just, even though I've done it, it still seems, I've got another one coming up in October, and it still seems just really far. So mentally, it's hard to wrap your head around traveling that far, even though you've done it before. I think just when you finish, it's just so special. And then the mental challenges that you go through, like, which is the same when you run a marathon, right? When you run that 26.2 miles, you have those ups and downs. There's typically a point, usually around the like 18 to 20 mile distance, where you hit that that wall, which can be either small or massive. Mm-hmm. And in a 100-mile race, you typically hit quite a number of those. And I just find the sort of the mental challenge of overcoming those repeated walls or challenges along the way, amazing. And then I think, at least for me, most of the hundreds that I've run have been in just amazing and beautiful places. And I've been fortunate enough to, you know, travel with my family to most of those. And we've tended to make it, into a, you know, sort of mini vacation where we'll head out just before the race. I'll do the race, and then we'll find somewhere to camp and hang out after that. So it tends to be not just a memory of the event itself, but just the whole time around that. For example, last year I was in, we went out to Colorado, and I ran the Silver Hills 100, which is out near, in the, Breckenridge area, and all above 10,000 feet, which was, for someone that lives in Maryland, was, that was a challenge all on its own. But, just being up that high, and above tree line and seeing those views when you know, we had a couple of climbs that were above 13,000 feet, which was breathless in multiple ways for a, sea level person, mm-hmm. but just incredible to be able to go to those places and be fairly remote, and traveling through those beautiful trails and up those beautiful mountains by foot is just, really special.
Yeah. I you know, being a mostly flatlander myself, I'm in Central Florida, so I can feel you for the sea level training. And then whenever you're out in anything that's remotely elevated, it's a bit of a, a bit of a shock and like you said, breathless sometimes. And it's certainly you get up to 10,000 and 13,000. Goodness gracious, that's a whole different world than what I'm used to. One of the things that you mentioned there that I have to go back on and ask to maybe pick your brain a little bit more is some of those mental struggles. And I know for myself, it's a big hurdle that I face in a lot of the races that I run. And I know from working with other runners and talking to folks on social media, things like that, that it's a fairly common place for runners to struggle. And I think that maybe for some of us that are more road runners, half marathon, marathon distance type of runners, we think about that wall you mentioned that we might hit at mile 9 or 10 of a half marathon, or somewhere between 18 and 22 of the full marathon, where it's just like, this kind of sucks. This is not a whole lot of fun. I'm hurting. I'm tired. I'm ready for this stupid race to be over. And you know, we have our races over then in whatever it is, 4 miles, 6 miles, 8 miles, depending on when you get to that rough patch. But we think of the idea, or at least I think of the idea, I won't maybe project this out on anybody else, but I think of, that's how I feel at mile, you know, say 20, 21. You know, going to mile 100 or mile 50 even, or mile 31 for a 50K, although I guess I've crossed that bridge now, but the idea of going that much farther instead of just hopefully a couple, 3, 4, 5 miles at most to get to the finish line, just seems beyond something that I want to do, I'm willing to do, maybe even can do. And to hear you say that you hit those points, those rough patches, those walls multiple times, it makes my head spin a little bit about the folks that do these 100-mile races on a regular basis, you being one of them. But how do you prepare yourself mentally and how do you improve your mental strength maybe to be able to get through those rough patches and keep going and knowing that there's probably going to be another one and maybe a few more of them before it's all said and done?
Yeah. I'm not sure there's a simple answer to that, or maybe there is. And maybe this at least first answer sounds a little too simplistic, but I always just tell myself to keep moving. And even if that movement in those dark patches becomes a death march, I, at least now that I've experienced, you know, these ultra distance races from 50Ks through to 100 milers, and most of them have been in mountainous areas, you often find patches where you kind of have to walk anyway, right? Because you're moving up a fairly big mountain. And so as long as I can keep moving and I'm not sitting down at an aid station or sitting down on the side of the trail, I always manage to pull myself out of those. So in one way, I think it's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I think obviously there's a lot of training that you can do, both, you know, physically through the type of training you're doing, extending the runs you're doing, and doing, you know, higher intensity workouts where relevant, and then getting your nutrition dialed in, because I think a lot of those slumps end up being nutrition related, where you just haven't you haven't taken in enough calories, or you've taken in the wrong types of food, and you can't eat for a while during these really long ultras, and then, you know, you're calorie deficient and your energy's gone. So I think just experience gets you to dealing better with nutrition, because you figure out what works for you and what doesn't. And then I think just having a pocket of mental tools to push yourself through those things, whether it's, looking at a tree in the distance and say, okay, I'm going to run to that tree, and then I'm going to walk to the next landmark, and then I'm going to run, and little mental tricks like that, or I often put an iPod shuffle or something like that in my pack, and don't use it until some point like later in the race, where all of my other mental tricks I've used them up and nothing else is working. And then I'll pull out some music and put that on, and just little things like that. You tend to sort of collect those tools, I think, as you train and race these longer races. And then you just have a whole bunch of them to use at different points in the race to push you through those dark patches.
Gotcha.
I'll add as well that my first 100, I had a good friend of mine, a really experienced ultra runner, pace me. And I think having him kind of guide me through those last 20, 30 miles and talk me through some of those rough patches. I think I learned a lot from him, and I've since then run hundreds with and without pacers, but I think just thinking back to how he guided me through some of those slumps has really helped a lot. So I think especially for first timers with those longer events like 100 milers, I think having an experienced pacer like that is super helpful.
Gotcha. Do you, in your experience, do you find that it gets easier? And I don't mean easy, but does it get easier mentally with dealing with some of those rough patches, those dark spots, or is it just something that, you know, you rely on the experience that I've done this before, and I know I can, you know, keep moving. I've got these bag of tricks that I can go to, but it's still really, really tough in those moments.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit of both. You kind of in the back of your mind, you know, you've done it before, you know, you've got these little tricks to get you through things. So your confidence builds, but because it's such a long way, and I think this applies to marathons and shorter ultra distance events as well, but maybe is amplified in the 100 mile distance, is that each one is so different. And, you know, I've now run five different 100 mile races, a couple here on the East Coast and a couple out West, and they've all just been so different in terms of one, just where they are, right, in the terrain, and being up above 10,000 feet, like I said, or being, you know, at sea level makes a huge difference. But just how rocky they are and when they start, right? I've done one that started at 6 p.m. and I've done races that start at 5 a.m. And even those differences make a massive impact on how you run and the weather, how hot or cold it is. I think you just can't predict how your body's going to react both physically and mentally to those different conditions.
Yeah. There's certainly no shortage of variables at play. And obviously the longer the course, the longer you're out there running, the more impact and the more just different variables that you may experience. You know, you're running a 3 or 4 or 5 hour road marathon and there's variables, and yes, there's things that can impact you, but it's not quite the same as, you know, a 24 to 30 hour race on the trails where it's dark and it's light and there's, you know, just all of the things that can happen during the course of a 100 mile race. So yeah, it makes sense just a little bit that every race is going to be quite a bit different and a different experience. And so when you hit those rough patches, depending on where they are, how you're feeling and how things are going, I can see it being, you know, you have that confidence, well, but it doesn't make it any easier to get through in the moment, I can imagine.
Yeah. I think, you know, like I said, I mean, I'm just thinking back to some of the hundreds I've done, and, you know, I've had ones that seemed in retrospect relatively easy. Like I ran Oil Creek, which is in Pennsylvania. It still has a lot of climbing, but it's relatively flat compared to some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. I've done more sort of rolling hills and shorter climbs than big mountains to climb. And that one just, I can remember back to feeling more in a sort of flow state through much of it and not hitting too many of those bad patches. And I, you know, I ran my fastest 100 time, but just that's more the course than me. But it was just, in hindsight, it felt incredibly easy compared to like the one I did out in Colorado, which took about 12 hours longer than that one, just because of where it was. And then I did another one out west. I did the Tahoe Rim Trail 100, which just was, in terms of beauty, was by far the most beautiful 100 I've done, just because of the views out there of the mountains and the lake. But I ended up getting lost at that one, right? So that turned into a whole different type of challenge. And, you know, adding another 8 or 9 miles onto a already long 100 mile distance race presented its own challenges. So yeah, they all kind of present unexpected challenges that sort of sneak up on you at some point during these longer races.
Yeah, I feel like that's the true trail running experience. No matter the distance, if you get lost on a trail race, you got to experience trail running at its finest. And I've done two trail races, one being the ultra, the other one being a local trail system here that's actually a cross country park. So it's pretty hard to get lost on that one. But yeah, the other trail, one guy misses a turn and you're following that guy and something happens that a marker got misplaced, and next thing you know, you're like, man, I don't know if we're on the right trail anymore. And boy, it's disheartening enough when it's a 50K. Still my mindset isn't where it needs to be to be able to handle the idea of doing that in a 100 miler. But yeah, that is the experience. Have you had other, maybe in some of the shorter races where you've been, missed a turn or things like that? Or for the most part, do you tend to stay on course pretty well?
Yeah, I think, most of the shorter ones I've done have been reasonably well marked and haven't made too many, nothing as significant as a getting lost for 8 miles,
right,
in the middle of the top of mountains. But yeah, I think in terms of the challenge, I think even though I like the 100 mile distance, probably my favorite race that I've done, ultra distance race, is a race called Hellgate in Virginia, and that's a 100K race, and it's just that I think I've run it 3 times. I've only managed to finish it 2 of those times, and it's just because of where it is and when it is, it's perhaps almost as challenging as some of the hundreds. It runs in the middle of I think it's maybe the second or third week of December. Mm-hmm. And it's a midnight start, and point to point. So as you probably know, the weather conditions can vary from fairly warm to, snow and ice and freezing cold. And it's a fairly small, event in terms of the number of runners that can run it each year. And, really just a beautiful and special course. So I think, even though I love that 100 mile distance, I think in terms of challenges and the sort of perfect course, because it's that sort of perfect point to point where you're starting at a logical place and finishing at a logical place, I just that I think adds something to that course as well. So that I'm running that one again this December, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that. I don't know. I mean, the 100K is enough for me to say, yeah, probably not right now. No thanks. But that midnight start is a variable that would be different. I've done a couple of folks that listen to the show know I've done used to do when it was an evening start, the Wine and Dine Half Marathon at Disney, pretty much every year. It started at 10 o'clock at night. And it is such a different dynamic, because I feel like most of us as runners are such a creatures of habit, in that, races start in the morning. So you get up, you've got your morning routine for before your training runs, before your races, you kind of know what you do and kind of can almost go on autopilot sometimes. When you start a race at midnight, how do you do midnight start, or at least late night start training runs to kind of know how things are going to work for you as far as your body goes, physiology, things like that? Or do you just kind of roll with it the first time? Or how do you attack a midnight start race?
Yeah, I know the first time I did it, I got it. I didn't plan well. And I remember I had done maybe a couple of night runs just to kind of get used to running in the dark and using a headlamp, which I didn't have too much experience with. But then actually sort of preparing my body for starting at midnight and taking in calories, which your body's not used to, right? It's usually asleep and not digesting food on the run. So I remember, just doing my normal sort of running nutrition plan of maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes or 45 minutes in, taking in a gel, and then 15 minutes later, just feeling really bad. Mm-hmm. And so I had really bad stomach issues that first time I ran it, just because my body didn't know what to expect. And I think I just put the wrong type of fuel in my body for a midnight start. But kind of practiced those things before the next time I ran, and it went much better. But yeah, I think that was the main, not so much the sleep issue, but just the your body just not being ready to immediately start digesting food at that point. Because like the 100-mile distance, you obviously run through the night. But I think because you've been running and you're not starting immediately at that point, your body's kind of in process and ready to take in calories and is kind of used to running, as opposed to just bang, starting at midnight and having to react differently than it would normally when you'd be asleep.
Yeah.
But a great challenge, though. I'd recommend that race to anyone that's in the area or wants to travel to Virginia in December.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, talk about a time of year and a location of the country where, boy, weather. I mean, you could go one extreme to the other as far as what weather's like in Virginia in December. Like, oh, goodness gracious, you wouldn't know what you were getting into until you got there, probably.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about some of these races and things that you've done, David, but how did you get into running? Has running always been something that's been part of your life, or is that something that's fairly more recent for you as far as, you know, kind of getting into running and diving right into the ultras? How did you get started in this sport?
Yeah, I mean, I never ran competitively in high school or college. I kind of picked up running, I think, while I was in university, just to sort of blow the cobwebs off and the too many beers I'd had, you know, the night before, and just stay healthy. And then it turned into something that I ended up really enjoying for better reasons than those, and dabbled in, you know, 10Ks and a few marathons, and did a little bit of triathlon a while back. And then I don't remember how. I think I was actually in a triathlon group, and I was at the time was living in Scotland in Edinburgh, and I joined a triathlon group, and they used to meet once a week to do some trail or fell running, as it's called there, and just really enjoyed it and started to go out more and more up into the trails. And then my family and I, we moved to Frederick, Maryland, where I live now, about 7 years ago, and had no idea there were so many amazing trails and mountains to run around here when we came. And then I went to I should run some more trails now that I'm here. I was still kind of more focused on road races at that point, and went into the local shoe store here in Frederick, which is now called Charm City Run, said, hey, I'm looking for some trail shoes. And the guy there that I'm now pretty good friends with, he said, you should go out to this place called the Frederick Watershed on Sunday mornings. There's a group that runs trails there. And so I went out and ran with these guys, and they were talking about these ultra distance races that I really knew very little about. And I ended up running with them for, you know, every Sunday. And they convinced me to try the local 50K, which I've run a bunch of times now, up in those same trails. And you know, you hang around with them long enough, and then slowly you get sucked into the 50 mile and the 100K and eventually the 100 mile distance races as well. So that was kind of how my love of trail running started. And now I've really not done any road races or serious ones in the last few years, and really focused on trail and ultra running.
Gotcha. I want to get back into that transition into ultra running and trail running in just a second, but first I want to take a quick second and pay a couple of bills. And once again, thanks to DKMS for their continued support of the show. But not only the support of the show, I mean, obviously that's great for me, but I certainly appreciate them and want to thank them and commend them for their work that they do in helping to battle and fight the fight with those that are dealing with blood cancer and other blood disorders all over the world. I mean, DKMS is an international nonprofit, and you know, in case you haven't heard me talk about them before, what they do is they register people who are willing to possibly be bone marrow donors, and you know, take a big database of people that are willing to do that, and put that up against the people who are in their system as far as people who have blood cancer, who have other blood disorders, and are looking for a marrow donation, a marrow transplant, as maybe the last possibility to change the course of the disease that they're fighting and potentially save their life. And to date, there's over 8 million people that are in the pool, the donor pool, and there have been over 70,000 bone marrow donations that have been facilitated because of the work that DKMS is doing. So they're supporting the show because us as runners and healthy folks and active individuals are some of the best, get some of the best results when it comes to doing the donations and the things working out and, again, potentially saving lives. So if you're willing to take the old cheek sample where they send you the Q-tips, you swab them around the inside of your mouth and send it back, all postage paid, costs you literally nothing but a few seconds to do it, and get yourself into the pool of potential lifesavers down the road. If somebody meets a genetic match for you that is in need, head over to dkms.org and you can request your free sample kit. And you can also text the word amazing. That's AMAZING to 50555. And you get all kinds of information. You can get your sample kit there as well. And you can join me in the pool of potential marrow donors and potential lifesavers, which is a pretty cool thing. And certainly appreciate you guys doing that, supporting DKMS and what they're doing. It keeps their support for me going. But the big thing here, the big picture, is that we're working together to potentially save some lives, which is a pretty cool thing indeed. So thanks to DKMS, and thank you guys for the continued support of DKMS and of the other sponsors that we have on the show as well. So, David, like you said, the peer pressure thing kind of got you, it sounds like, as far as, you're hanging out with trail runners, you're hanging out with these guys that are like, come on, let's do this 50K. It's my favorite line is, it's only 5 miles more than a marathon. It's not that big of a deal. If you can do a marathon, it's 5 more miles. What's that? Obviously you've had some success. You've climbed the ladder and run some of these longer races, these 100 milers, things like that. Was it a pretty easy transition for you from the roads to the trails, or was it a bit of a learning curve and a struggle to get your footing into that kind of the quote unquote low end of the ultra distant racing level of the sport, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly, those first few 50Ks that I did were, I remember them being very challenging for a number of reasons, just covering that. They've all been on trails and fairly, the trails around here at least are pretty technical, a lot of rocks and roots, and a decent amount of climbing. So just those things don't tend to exist on road races, right? So just kind of getting used to that, even though I'd done shorter training runs and on those trails, just covering that long of a distance, even though it is only five miles longer than a marathon, covering that amount of distance on technical trails was just something I wasn't used to doing. And my training wasn't as dialed in at that point, and I didn't really know what I was doing in terms of nutrition. And just learning all those things over the first sort of year or two, and experimenting a little bit with training and, getting insight from fellow runners. And I had a coach for at least my first, leading up to my first 100-mile race, I had a coach that was a local friend here that really helped as well, just kind of learning off from her and what she had experienced with both herself running longer distance races and coaching others, I think was super, super helpful. But yeah, those first few 50Ks were pretty challenging for a variety of reasons, mainly around just not knowing how to train for those distances and the nutrition as well.
Was there any struggle? We talked about the mental side of 100-mile races, ultra distance races before, with the dark patches and whatnot, and the hitting the walls and those areas of struggle during the race. But one thing that I know I've experienced, and I've talked to other runners that have experienced this as well, where if you've been a predominantly road runner, and then whether you switch to becoming a predominant trail runner or just do some workouts on the trail to mix things up once in a while, that change in pace where you feel like you're working maybe harder on the trail, yet your pace is a minute, 2 minutes per mile slower, maybe more than that, depending on the terrain and depending on how you're feeling that day and a whole host of other variables. Was there any struggle for you on that side of things, going from predominantly a road runner to dabbling in the trails, and just how I don't know if difficult is the right way of saying it, but how much maybe slower, just the difference between on the roads, we're often so much focused on the watch. And my experience with trail runners is it's not quite that much of a focus, but there's that transition period for a lot of folks. Did you experience that as well?
Yeah, I think a little bit, just not being used to needing an extra hour or mm-hmm. two or more, right, to cover what was close to being the same distance for a 50K versus a marathon. Like, some of the even fast times for some of the 50Ks around here, the challenging ones are, over 5 hours, mm-hmm. which is way slower than a marathon. So, yeah, I think getting used to that slower pace and being out on the course for that much longer, I think, was a challenge. But I think just to sort of counter that, I think the locations of these races are just always in such beautiful places. Mm-hmm. At least the ones I've done, that I think that sort of balanced out the, I guess, slowness or slower running that you do in these trail races, and just being out on the beautiful trails and up in the mountains and things just, I think make, at least for me, that's why I now focus on trail races, is just, mm-hmm. I love that aspect of the trail running community so much.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something to be said about not just experiencing concrete and pavement, and it might be a different city, and every city of course has its own things that are fun to look at, and sites and landmarks and buildings and things like that, but at the end of the day, most cities are fairly similar. But yeah, you get out on the trails, different trails in the same area can be so dramatically different, and the seasons and the change and from one season to the next, it's never a dull moment. And as I'm starting to learn, if that means you slow down a little bit more and take in some more sights and scenery along the way, like that's not necessarily the end of the world. It's still a good day out on the trails, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, very true.
So shifting gears a little bit, David, into some of the kind of the other side of your life, although maybe a little bit of running as well. As I mentioned in the intro, you're a plant-based athlete, vegan, if I remember correctly, because there's a sliding scale sometimes, vegetarian and veganism. So you're a vegan endurance runner. Has that always been something that kind of plant-based lifestyle of diet been something that's long been a part of your regular routine, that's the way you've eaten forever, or how did you get into that side of things? If maybe you started out being a more kind of quote unquote traditional diet and switched over into the veganism?
Yeah, it's certainly not been, I've not been vegan or plant-based for my whole life. It was something that happened, I guess, 5-6 years ago, kind of, I don't know if it was a coincidence or not, but around the same time that I sort of transitioned over to, away from road running to trail running. I had read a book, which I'm sure everyone on your, all of your audience knows who Scott Jurek is. I read his book, Eat and Run. Around the time I was training for the Baltimore Marathon, and my, my training didn't go too well. I wasn't recovering very well after, high intensity workouts or long runs, and in the end, the race didn't go the way I'd hoped either. And I remember coming back from that race in the week afterwards and reflecting back on that book and telling my wife, I think I'm going to try this, plant-based thing out. And, initially, I cut out all, dairy and meat except for fish. So I was eating a little bit of fish once a week. But when I cut out at least the dairy, I noticed this almost immediate positive change in how I felt. I guess in hindsight, I was probably, lactose intolerant and didn't realize it. But it had a really profound effect on just how I felt. Generally, but also my running as well. I could recover quicker and just felt better in my, during my runs and particularly during long runs or harder effort, runs. And then, I remember I took a trip to Europe and, for whatever reason, just, ate a lot of fish, because maybe that was the only thing that was, available in terms of meals. And I came back from that trip and I told my wife, okay, that's it. I'm not eating any fish anymore either. I had that enough for the rest of my life. So I, at that point, just went completely plant-based or, you know, or vegan, and have been that way ever since. And kind of learned initially that sort of transition was purely for myself, more sort of selfish reasons to improve my running. But I started to learn about the, you know, all the positive health impacts of eating less animal products. And my middle child at that point was having, you know, not that he was super unwell, but just having some general sort of GI issues. And I remember telling my wife, maybe he has the same kind of issues with dairy that I do. And so we removed that from his diet, and he had all these positive effects just like I had. And then pretty fast from that point on, or pretty quickly, I should say, my whole family moved to a plant-based diet. So I have I'm married and have three young sons, and now we're all plant-based or vegan, have been, I guess, the whole family for maybe four years or so. So it's been a really interesting journey. And I've learned, you know, like I said, initially it was just running focused, and then I started to learn about all the positive health benefits beyond just athletic performance, and then started to learn more about, you know, some of the impacts of animal agriculture on the environment and things like that. You know, like about 15% of all climate change is attributed to animal agriculture, and it's such at least the industrial animal agriculture right. system is so inefficient, right? Like feeding loads of grains to animals that that we then eat. Just as the population increases and is projected to grow to, you know, 10 billion people by 2050, the current system is just not going to be able to feed all of those people. And that's not even to mention like just the animal welfare issues that go along with this high intensity farming. So, you know, I was learning all these things, and you mentioned in the beginning of the call that I'm, you know, a scientist. I've been, since I finished my PhD, I've worked in the biotech life science industry, and was mainly focused on helping companies commercialize cells and other products to investigate diseases and to help pharma companies find new drugs and vaccines for diseases, which is super rewarding work. And the science was really interesting. But what I found myself being really drawn to something that was that I could do that was sort of closer to impacting people and animals. And so over the, you know, the last couple of years, I've been looking to see if there were areas where I could apply my skills and background in something more related to food and more aligned with my, you know, new world view that I had discovered around plant-based eating. And that's how I came upon this this role at the Good Food Institute that I started a year ago, which, as you mentioned in the beginning of the call, is we're a nonprofit focused on helping the plant-based meat and clean meat being meat from cells, those industries move forward, really with the aim of solving those issues that I mentioned before, you know, around the environment and animal welfare and human health. So that book that I read, you know, from Scott Jurek, you know, 5-6 years ago, has really had a profound effect on me. Not just my my diet, but my career as well has changed as a result of that book. So I'm very grateful to him. Interestingly, I ran a 50-mile race last year called Mountain Masochist, also down in Virginia, and he happened to be there to give a pre-race talk the evening before, and I had a chance to say hi to him and thank him for the book that he wrote. So there's been a nice closure to that story for me. I was very happy that I had the chance to thank him.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, not just changing the way you ate from reading that book, but obviously the whole way things have played out and kind of changing the career trajectory a little bit. I will admit, willingly admit, to being fairly ignorant as far as the science of especially clean meat and kind of some of the things that are going on there. And I'm going to wager a guess that at least a few folks that are listening probably don't know a whole lot about that industry as well and kind of where we are right now and where the science is going. So, you know, we definitely don't have time to go super in depth here. And it probably wouldn't take more than a minute or two for you to get so far over my head and maybe a few others' heads as well, that it would all of a sudden wouldn't be useful anymore. But, you know, that side of things I'm admittedly intrigued by. So, I am a card carrying, meat eater. I, that said, though, you know, I don't want it to sound like I try to as much as possible. You know, that we have ranchers and farmers in the area, so I can get pastured and grass fed and try to stay out of the industrial meat complex as much as possible. And always try to eat more vegetables. And I've talked to various vegetarian and plant based runners to try to get some tips and tricks and thoughts on how to get more veggies in my diet and maybe cut back on the meat a little bit, you know, as I'm willing and I'm willing to dabble here. But the one thing I've heard people say before is, you know, there's substitutes, there's different things you can use that taste the same as meat products. And that irks me a little bit because maybe it tastes the same, but the texture, the mouthfeel, there's a difference. It may not be a better or worse, but don't tell me that it's the same one way or the other. But this clean meat alternative is something I'm intrigued with where if I understand it correctly, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong and tell me kind of where you see things hopefully going. But it's basically, I mean, it's still meat. It's not some substitute necessarily, but the way you're obviously you're not harvesting it from actual live animals, you're growing it in the lab. Am I onto something here? And if so, kind of where is this train going? And what time frame are we looking at? Maybe that becoming more of a mainstream option for still eating meat, but not having to go through the same way that we've been, you know, raising animals and the industrial farming or industrial complex and all that kind of stuff that's going on right now that maybe isn't as sustainable as this opportunity might be.
Yeah, it's a super interesting area from a scientific perspective, but just as you just said, all the other potential positive impacts it can have. So you're right. It's you know, clean meat is still meat from animals, and you know, the view we take is that you know, you can, like you said, you can create food from plants that has that might look and taste fairly similar to animal meat, and even some of the newer plant-based products that have come out in the last year or two, where they've really, I think, you know, if you look back, like, you know, 10 years plus, a lot of the vegetarian and vegan products were designed for vegetarians and vegans, right? They weren't designed for people like you that still want to eat meat from animals, and so those products weren't really, the companies weren't focused on creating something that was an exact mimic of the animal product they were trying to replace. It was really just to provide vegetarians and vegans with something to put, for example, between two slices of bread, right? But there's been amazing innovation on that side in the last couple of years, where companies like Impossible Foods have looked at the burger and said, okay, with the beef that goes into that, what are all the components in there that provide the taste and the texture and the aroma and the mouthfeel that consumers expect from when they bite into a burger? And they've identified all of those. And one example is in a burger, there's heme, which is, you know, carries the hemoglobin, carries the blood in the cow and in our bodies as well. And that provides that heme molecule provides a lot of the taste and other attributes that people associate with a good burger. And there's actually heme that is produced by plants as well. And so they were able to find a heme from soy. It's called soy leg hemoglobin, and produce that and add that as an ingredient into their plant-based burger. And I don't know if you've they're only available in restaurants right now, but I'd really recommend, just from a taste test experience, of going out and trying one, because I've not eaten meat in a while, but the first time I bit into one of those, I really thought I was eating an actual burger, just because they've nailed the taste and texture so well. So there's really been a shift in those plant-based products to focus on the, you know, so-called flexitarian, the consumer that's trying to eat less less animal meat or less animal products, mm-hmm. be more conscious about their decisions. Like you said, not try to buy from stores or restaurants that are getting their products from the industrial animal agriculture system, and be more, just more conscious, right? So those products are being developed for those consumers and really designed to exactly biomimic the animal product they're trying to replace. Mm-hmm. But all that said and done, what we see is that even if you create the perfect plant-based product that exactly mimics a burger or a chicken nugget or whatever, people still want to eat meat from animals. It might be for cultural reasons. It might be because you can't just get the taste and texture right, exactly right. And so that's where clean meat comes in. And like you said, it is meat from animals, but instead of requiring the slaughter of an animal to get the meat, the process requires just a small biopsy of cells from an animal, from a donor animal, and this would be, you know, sort of sesame seed size amount of cells. So very similar to, you know, if you had to go into the doctors or hospital for a small biopsy, they're relatively painless. Right. It would be the same procedure for an animal. So you'd access those cells, and those can be proliferated or expanded almost indefinitely, right? So even from that small starting population of cells, you can then produce massive amounts of meat from those. So these companies right now are taking those cells from a variety of different animals, both land and aquatic animals, and are growing them up in big fermenters that are, at least in the industry, are called bioreactors, but they're very similar to the fermenters you would see in like a brewery or a factory that produces yogurt, really the same type of technology. So they're growing these cells up, and then they're changing the conditions that those cells are in, which pushes them to turn into the cells that make up meat, which is primarily muscle, fat, and connective tissue. Those are all the cells that are present in meat. And so it's from a technical perspective, it's a fairly simple process. You start with those cells, you make more of them because cells double over time, mm-hmm. and then you instruct those cells by changing the conditions to turn into the meat. And there's about 25 companies that exist today. They're all early stage startup companies. So nothing is commercially available yet. But I would expect that, you know, some of these companies are projecting that they'll have a product in maybe in a, you know, a one or two high end restaurants in the next couple of years. Wow. But I think will be some time before we see it in, you know, available in your grocery store. And that's really just a matter of bringing the cost down, mm-hmm. And scaling up, which is the same for any new technology, right? Right. Whether it's a mobile phone or a digital camera, the first versions of those are always expensive, mm-hmm. and produced at low volume. And then as the industry progresses, we see costs come down and the availability go up. But for all intents and purposes, yeah, these clean meat products are going to be identical to meat from a slaughtered animal, but in many ways better. And that's kind of why the term clean meat is used, because it gives that nod to clean energy, because it's going to be better for the environment. It uses far less land, and there's no antibiotics involved. So, you know, these issues of antibiotic resistance and superbugs goes away. So there's a lot of, even though people will still be able to eat meat from animals, there's a lot of positive benefits for the environment and human health that come from clean meat. So it's a really exciting area of the food industry and science right now. I'm super happy to be involved in it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's something that I feel like I've heard about a little bit, but I'm glad to get a little bit better picture of it, and certainly, you know, look forward to when that becomes a bit more available. And like you said, it's, you know, the early introduction, it takes a little bit of time, but then, you know, and as demand starts to hopefully creep up for it eventually, and then production, like you said, it all starts to scale, the price becomes more reasonable. And I would imagine that, you know, long term, it is probably could be every bit, you know, the same price, if not maybe even a little bit cheaper because of, I don't know, maybe not, but I feel like, you know, at some point, if it does continue to scale, I mean, it at least less labor intensive maybe to replicate or, yeah, and to produce. So that would help bring the cost down as well.
Yeah, for sure. Everything that we've seen suggests that it's going to be the same or cheaper than meat from a slaughtered animal. And that's, I mean, it's not going to be produced in a lab, right? It's going to be produced in a clean factory, much right. like, you know, if you can imagine a large pharmaceutical facility that produces, you know, drugs and vaccines that people use on a daily basis, the clean meat production facility would look very similar to that, right? And you can automate those and use, you know, clean energy to power them. So I think when these things do come online, you know, down the road, I think, we'll see huge benefits. And also just globally as well, right? You won't, you can create these plants, these manufacturing plants, essentially anywhere. So thinking about sort of global poverty and food security issues, I think this is another area where clean meat can help.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that a lot of I mean, just, you know, as technology changes, there's always you know, new opportunities, new ways of doing it. I'm thinking of just, you know, the shipping of you know, mm-hmm. getting the food to the folks that need it, like you said, in some of the you know, third world type of areas or the underprivileged areas. Like if it's right there, now there's no shipping issues. It's another environmental thing. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out over the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, we actually have, we're GFI, the Good Food Institute that I work for. You can find out more about clean meat and what we do at GFI.org, but we're actually putting on a conference next month. So just in 2 weeks, I guess, first week of September out in Berkeley, California. And there's a whole day on plant-based meat and a whole day on clean meat. It's actually being live streamed as well. So anyone that's interested in learning more about this industry can head to our website, and I think there's a link on the website that you can register for the live stream. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll be out in Berkeley for that, and getting to meet all of the interesting scientists and entrepreneurs and investors involved in this space.
Well, fantastic. And this will be out then just before you get there. So guys, if you're interested in watching a little bit, learning and kind of seeing what's going on at the conference, we'll try to scrounge up the link for the live stream and put it into the show notes as well. So once again, disruns.com/618, we'll hopefully have that link there as well, or at least a link back over to the GFI Good Food Institute, and you can then find it on your own. But we'll see if we can't scrounge it up, if it's available beforehand. I guess if it's not available when this posts, then you'll have to go ahead and find it on your own. But anyway, David, as we're wrapping up here, the way I like to end the call is with what I call a philosophical question. And this is something that's kind of similar to the introductory mm-hmm. question. It can be, it's very simple, very open-ended. You can take it however long or short that you want to go, but it's usually just a good place to kind of wrap things up and put a bow on it and kind of shift them back to the running side of your life. At this point in your life and the years that you've been running, and now, you know, being into the ultras and mostly running trails, not much on the road anymore, 100 miles, all of the things that we've already talked about, what does it mean to you? What does running and having running as a part of your life on a regular basis, you know, just very open-ended, what does it mean to you to be a runner? What do you want that to hope that it says about you, or what does it bring to you, or just what is the thing that keeps you going and keeps you going out the door every day and hitting the trails and doing what you're doing, sign up for races, all these things? What does it mean to be a runner for you?
Wow, that's a great question. I think I don't think I have a single answer for that, but I think, you know, kind of going back to what I talked about before, I think what I love the most are long races in the mountains, and long, not just races, long training runs in the mountains. So heading out, you know, typically on a Sunday morning, either by myself or with some friends, and, you know, running trails and up and down mountains for, you know, 4 or 5 plus hours. It just brings me so much joy. And then typically on a weekday, I'll run some trails near my house with my dog. And that's something I look forward to as well. So just from a sort of pure running perspective, just using my feet and my, you know, muscles and to power myself through that kind of terrain just brings me a lot of joy and peace. I find it a time for, you know, just sort of silence to reflect on things and enjoy nature. Makes me very happy. And I think just alongside that, just being a positive role model for my kids as well, that I'm, you know, active and outdoors. I think they see that, that, you know, they've been at most of my ultra races, particularly the 100-mile races, and see the, you know, sort of struggles that I go through at the various aid stations that they see me at and at the finish, and see how I can overcome those. And I think perhaps, you know, they're not old enough to process all of it, but I think they see the dedication I put into training for those races and the and what I go through during the races, what I go through, and everyone else at the race as well, right? They get to see everyone running through those aid stations and at the finish. And I think that's really been a very positive impact on them, even though they're still quite young. And then just, I think finally, just, I mean, in my really small part of the world, I hope that, you know, my running and the, you know, how conscious I try to be with my diet as well. And I hope that has a positive impact on people that know me. And then I've been really fortunate enough that, you know, a small group of people have trusted me with their coaching. And that is, I think, bringing me at the moment even more joy and happiness than my own running. It's just helping people get better as runners and better as athletes, and see them overcome some of their own challenges has been incredibly rewarding over the past couple of years since I've been doing it. So I'm very grateful to running for many, many reasons. As I mentioned before, I think that you know, reading a book about running has kind of transformed my entire life, and I only have good things to say about running and how it's impacted me and people around me.
Yeah, totally agree. And as per usual, I'm not gonna get in the way of that. That's a great place to put a bow on things and wrap things up. So once again, guys, plantpoweredrunning.com is the website. We'll have the links to everything, the various social media accounts, and I'm not gonna let myself get tripped up over trying to go through those again. So we'll have those linked up in the show notes, disruns.com/618. And if we can find links for the live streams of the conference that David mentioned, we'll link those there as well. But if not, we'll definitely have links to the Good Food Institute, and you can get to them through there on the weekend of I believe it's the 8th and 9th or something like that is the conference. So you can tune in and learn a little bit about maybe the future of food as well, and how that may benefit you as a runner, or how that may impact you as a runner. So anyway, David, thank you for taking the time today. Certainly appreciate it. Certainly, you know, like I said at the beginning, I'm planning on expecting to learn something, and I definitely did. So I appreciate sharing a little bit of the insight from your professional life and how that impacts you as a runner, and how that may impact us as runners as well. So certainly wishing you nothing but the best going forward. Looking forward to staying in touch, seeing how this some of the things you're working on continue to progress, and how that is going to change the world we live in. Hopefully nothing but for the better. But until then, please be well, and thanks again for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Danny. It's been I really enjoyed the conversation, and thank you for what you do. I love what you're doing with your podcast and you know, spreading all the positive messages about running and what it can do for people. So thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope that you enjoyed the conversation between David and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know, what stood out to you from today's episode? What was something that we talked about that made you scratch your head a little bit or wonder or think or stop and rewind and say, I got to listen to that again. What was it today that really stood out for you? For me, it was more of a theme, I think, than anything specific. But the whole idea of the clean meat that David talked about, where you're literally taking a small biopsy of cells from a food animal and reproducing it in the lab, is kind of on the surface, you just see that headline, Franken meat or something like that, and it's kind of like, oh, heck no. But talking to David, doing a little bit of research, reading an article or two, you start to find out that maybe it's not as far-fetched as it seems. Now, it may still be many years from, coming into being a common thing, something that, is affordable and is on the shelves at every store and things like that. Like, we may not be there quite yet. But, again, when I first hear about it, the first headline, my gut reaction is one thing. Then I find out more about it and I'm more open to the possibility, open to the idea, seeing where the science goes, seeing what the future holds for this line of food production, for clean meat as a viable alternative to, factory farmed and just the way that our food is produced, our meat products are produced these days. Not trying to put my stake pro, con, whatever, but just looking forward to seeing what the future holds and following along with it. The reason that stands out to me is because there's a lot of things in my own life, and maybe this would resonate to you as well, where you hear the first headline, you hear the first little blurb, and you think, oh, heck no. No way would I slow down to try to get faster by doing heart rate training. No way would I turn to intermittent fasting or go to a high-fat, low-carb style of eating when we know that carb loading is the way to go and we need our carbs for fuel and things like that. And those are, just a few of the ways that things that I've changed my mind about fairly dramatically in the last, 12 to 18 months, something like that. And what that requires and why this is my takeaway is it's a good reminder for me to not just see the headline of something and dismiss it offhand, or not just hear about it on the news or some clickbait article or something on social media and just dismiss it because it sounds ridiculous. Now, there may be some things that really are just ridiculous and should just be dismissed offhand. But for the most part, a lot of things maybe sound ridiculous, especially if they're flying in a completely different direction or realm or school of thought than what you're used to or than what is the quote-unquote conventional wisdom. But if you start to look at it, look at the research, look at the science, maybe try it, you might just find out that it works, that it's beneficial, that it's helpful, that those bold claims that you were originally just going to dismiss as being absolutely asinine, maybe they hold some water. Maybe they pass muster. Maybe there's something to it. And so I feel like that's where I am with this whole clean meat thing. Like I said, at the beginning, first hear the headline, no way. But start to do a little research, talk to David, listen to what he has to say, listen to, a guy who's at the forefront of the science and hear what he has to say and what the possibilities may be. Maybe indeed. Maybe I'm open to that because I took the time to listen and learn and check into it myself. So that's my takeaway. Always be willing to listen, learn, and do a little bit of investigation. And who knows? You might just change your mind on something that you've long been kind of firmly rooted against, and you might become a convert simply because you went past the headline and dove a little deeper, whether it's that's a running related topic or something else entirely. So that was my takeaway. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRun. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can head over to the show notes for this episode or any episode of the show. Leave your thoughts, your feedbacks, your takeaways there. You can also ask me a question in the show notes. You can ask me a question on the contact page. But all of those things are easily accessible from each page of the website, each show notes page. And to get to today's show notes from our conversation with David today, DizRuns.com/618. We'll take you right there. Let me know what you think. There's links. There's photos. There's all of the things are available in the show notes for this episode and always. So check them out. Check out the great work that Ellen does as well. Thank you, Ellen, for doing the show notes. Appreciate your work. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up for today. A little longer episode than normal, but you can tell, I hope you can tell that I was having a great chat and having my mind blown and mind opened up and expanded by some of the things that David was talking about, both in the food science related part of the world and in his running, just that 100-mile stuff. It's crazy, still crazy to me, but I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well. And once again, thanks to the folks from DKMS for their continued support. And again, equally important, thank you for the support that you give to the sponsors and specifically to DKMS, potentially saving a life. You can't do more than that, right? So thank you for doing that. Thanks for signing up. If you haven't already, DKMS.org or text the word amazing, AMAZING, to 50555. And now we'll officially pull this boat into harbor, line it up at the dock and cast the lines and tie it up. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this one. As always, if you did, tell a friend, spread the news. Show continues to grow, and it's all because of you. So thank you for all you do. And until next time, please be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. Be safe out there, wherever you're running, roads, trails, or anything in between. Be safe, have fun, and we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.